Today is February 13th, and we would like to finish Koheles today. We are up to Perek Zion, Pasuk Chof Vav. Okay. Where Shlomo finally gets around to his treatment of women. Koheles does not take so kindly to the institution. Strange considering that he had 300 wives and 700 concubines, right? Okay, so just imagine that each and every one of them spent every livelong day trying to convince him that her son should be the next king, right? And when you consider what we've said a few times based on the end of Perek Gimel, based on the first Targum to the Sefer, that this whole book is written because with all those wives, with that amazing harem, he did not leave a worthy son to follow in his path. Right? He left a son who would lose it all, who would squander it all. So what is the point of lo yaleid la rik v'la, you know, leid la behala? What are we striving for? It's all going nowhere. Right? Must all businesses end in bankruptcy? Okay, so he blames it here on the woman. Perek Zayin Pasuk Chaf Vav Umotzei Ani Mar Mimaves Saisha Asher Himet Sodim B'Charamim Liba Asurim Yodeha Tov Lifnei Elokim Imalei Mimena Lechotei Lached Ba. A sinner will succumb to her. Right? You sin, it'll be worse for you. Ve'ezeh matzasi amra koheles, achas la'achas l'mtzoh cheshbon. Here it says amra koheles, here it's feminine. Asher od biksha nafshi v'lo matzasi, adam echad me'elech matzasi, v'yishob echol eilu lo matzasi. I find a mensch in one of a thousand, but even in that number I don't find a good woman. Wow. What is going on here? So, the Targum says that this is, he's talking about historical events, he's talking about the institution of marriage. I mean, it's quite a bit of a elaboration in the Targum. Rashi says it refers to, again, specific things. Right? Look, until Shlomo, it's really the woman in the family who directs where the future is going. It's Sarah who chooses between Yitzchak and Yishmael. It's Rivka who chooses between Yaakov and Esav. And if in the next generation everything blows up, it's because there's no Rachel in the scene. Right? I only see women saving Moshe's life. There's a Shifra, there's a Pua, there's Yocheved, there's a Miriam, there's a Basparo. I don't see a single man in that story saving Moshe. It's the woman who tells Yehuda, this is what you need to do for the perpetuation of your family. And Chazal look up to all these women directing the men to the right direction. It's Rus who tells Boaz, it's time already. No. What do you intend to do here? Without Naomi and Ruth's intervention, would Boaz just continue to sit on his hands? Right? So what's Koheles? What is his taina against the women here? The indication in Tanakh is that Adarabba, and Chazal say the same about the Tzidkanios in Egypt. The men would have just been satisfied listening to Amram just saying we shouldn't be having any more children. You know what Drasha told me, Man Yishnofa. It was Miriam, it was the women, Sikonios, who convinced the men to turn things around. So what's going on? What is he doing? So either you say it's personal, someone in this man's capacity of running a state, just like he didn't know how to care, he didn't have to be careful anymore. Remember, he's the king that he's talking about earlier, who gave in to, who let Yeravam run roughshod over my kingdom. And my son, Rechavim, behaved just like me, as I behaved like my father. And impetuosity, or whenever Chazal talk about splitting the kingdom in half. We talked about this before. Right? Okay. So, the Torah says, Lo yarbelo nashim. The Gemara darshins out that it's 18. But that should be enough for a king, no? And the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the second parak, it says that Shlomo said, Ani arbe, and I won't let them do what the Torah worries about. Lo yosuris livavi. Right? I won't fall to that. I'm too smart for that. Lo yarbelo susim, I'll get horses. I won't go back to Egypt. Lo yarbelo kesef, don't have too much money because I may become haughty. He did all three of those and succumbed to all three of them. Don't outsmart the Torah. Right? Okay, so the thing his undoing was Egypt, right? That's where Yeravim ben Nevat escaped to and created his plan to take over the kingdom. That's the horses. The wealth. One can see in the text the downfall in Melachim Aleph is after he finishes the celebration for the completion of the Beis HaMikdash and he builds his own house, the gaudy ostentation of what's going on in Israel, you can see that's the downfall. If you read it for the first time, you say, no, this is not why we have kings. This is why Persia has kings. Do you see the satire of the way Ahasuerus runs his country? Everyone's drinking and everyone, and it's ostentation and keep everybody happy. You see that's where Shlomo's kingdom went. Right? So maybe all that ostentation was L'shem Shemayim so that he can be warning people against the being the Nehaneh. Remember? Chacham Nehaneh Omel Navi / Yirei Hashem. Okay. So that I'll stick with that because in Mishle he has somewhat more of a positive, optimistic view of Matzah Isha, Matzah Tov, you fake with Sami Hashem, you know, says Baba Sotishke Tamid, you know. Okay. But in all fairness, in Koheles also tells the listener, find a loving wife and you may have lecha and you know, it's going to make it easier for you to deal with all these life's inconsistencies and how unfair life is if you have someone to share that with. Okay, so that turns us to Perek Ches. Right? We're doing Perek Ches Pasuk Tes. As kol zero isi v'nason es libi l'chol ma'aseh asher na'aseh tachas ha'shemesh, es asher shalat adam be'adam l'ra lo. Right? I have found something so debilitating. I take it to my heart. Right? Look at the Targum for a minute. It says, Yas kol dein chazisti hava ba'alma. I look at the things in this world. V'yavis yas lebavi lemidah yas kol avadadi saved ba'alma t'chos shimsha. And I see everything that's done in this world under the sun be'idan di'yishlot enosh be'enosh la'avashalei. What I see that bothers me so much is where people don't get what they deserve. It's the whole point of the Tanakh is you reap what you sow. Right? Isn't that what all the prophets say? Do this and this will happen. And if you change and do that, that will happen. So if someone sees that and changes, I mean, that's back to what we said in the Theodicy when we discussed in the beginning of the semester. Abraham looks at this unfair, apparently unfair situation in Saddam and says, Ha'avti spet tzadikim Russia? I mean, where do we see in the Torah something like that? It's Ir HaNidachas. Right? The Russia, the tzadik and the Russia lose everything, but at least the tzaddik gets to escape. Right? So God, that doesn't seem fair. So God allows man to have a say in what's fair. Okay? Right? So that's just... But look, the prophets all question God on this. Yirmiyahu Perek Yudbeis, just a smattering of prophets who dealt with this question. Yirmiyahu Yudbeis, Madua Derech Rishaim Tzalecha. Why do you allow the wicked to thrive? Right? And when Yirmiyahu goes on to continue with his question about how well they do, it's amazing. The Malbim says he is one by one flicking off the friends of Eov and their tainas against Eov. Basically, the taina, all their tainas can be encapsulated the basic theme that God is more just than man. God is righteous. He's all knowing. He is all benevolent. He is all existent. He's all these omnis, and he's all omniscient. He knows everything. So how can you believe in these four omnis and convince us that you're not getting what you deserve? Right? And your children didn't deserve what happened to them. So Eov says, listen, I agree with all these omnis that you're mentioning to me. But I know me better than you. I know I don't deserve this, and I want my day in court with God. We talked about this, right? I mean, that God doesn't tell him anything personally, just shows him the great chasm between man and God. Right? So So Yirmiyahu says, Madua derech rishim tzolecha. So what did one of Eov's friends say? That success you see from the Rasha, right? You don't know what's going on inside his house, or the strife, all the fears of whether one of his enemies is going to take him out, because a Russia surely has some enemies, right? That drug lord who owns $47 billion and two islands in the Caribbean, surrounded by hundreds of guards, right? He's always worried that there is a reconnaissance that has a missile on his head or on his house, right? What kind of life is that? So comes Yirmiyahu that says, Shalu kovod de bugged. They have shalva. They do have inner peace. Don't tell me, Bildad, that the Russia doesn't have inner peace. He does. So then comes Eliphaz to say, yeah, but it only lasts that. That's it. It's finished with him. He'll get his comeuppance sometime in the future. So he says, no, nitatom. He's planted. He plants his evil. It doesn't just end with him. He's not going bankrupt in 2 years. So then comes Sofar, and Sofar says, yeah, but they don't take root. Yeah, he gets in the tia, but that's it, it's finished. As soon as he dies, it's finished. No! Netatom gam sharoshu! They take root. Yeah, but they won't make any fruit. Yelchu gam yesuperi! They bear fruit. This last generations. Yirmiyahu is not lying here. Yirmiyahu says, I see this. So, according to the Radak, Yirmiyahu didn't get an answer to this question. It's a big machlokas in the Mishonim, whether he's talking about successful Jews or successful Babylonians. The Pashto says he's talking about successful Jews, which is an unsavory position, since he asks God to take all those people and punish them already. Right? Be that as it may, we see that prophets really, really hold God to the feet to the fire on this. Did we ever read the beginning of Habakkuk?
I don't believe so.
Listen to this. Ad ona Hashem shivati velo tishma. How long do I have to cry out and they are not listening? Ezake lecha chamas velo toshia. I scream out about all the violence and you don't save anybody. Loma tareni oven for amol tabit v'shod. Tabit v'shod v'chamas l'negdi. Why do I have to look at all this strife and all this iniquity, and why I have to look at all the violence and all the destructive force? Vayhi rivu madom yisa. And all I see is fighting and strife. Al kein tafuk Torah. That's why your Torah is weak. V'lo yitzel netzach mishpat. And no one cares to promulgate justice. Ki rosha machtir es tzadik. See, every the Russia always wins out. Someone likes to win once in a while, right? Why shouldn't the tzaddik on occasion get something good from you, God? Why should anyone care to be a tzaddik? People like, I mean, it's low lishma, but still, people like to see some kind of, I expect some kind of reward for my good behavior. Right? That's why justice is perverted. That's a lot of chutzpah. God should swat him down like he should have swatted Avraham down. Right? There's more. There's psukim like this in Tehillim. There's psukim like this all over. Eliyahu says to God, God, the people are wicked, and you made them that way. Not you made them because you gave me a Tzahara. You made them that way because of what's going on in this world. I hear some very, very angry students sometimes talking that way. Look at the world out there. Who can we trust? Who's telling us the truth? It's such a mess. I have a high school class where I ask the kids to, sometimes answer certain questions. One of the questions was, write a 2-sentence letter to God. And so one of the students wrote, Dear God, I'm sorry we humans are messing up your perfect world. Please forgive us. It's very clever. Halavai, we should all, many people choose to blame it on God, which Chabakuk does. All right, so that's what's going on here in Koheles. All right. Okay. And he says that their rishus, their evil, is forgotten at their levaya. They could be really wicked people, but they're still going to get a good eulogy. That gets me crazy, says Koheles. Okay, let's continue. So, let's go to Pasuk Yud Bet. Asher choteh ose ra me'isu ma'as u'ma'arich lo, ki gam yodeh ani asher yatov liray Elokim asher yiru milfanav. Right? Koheles is starting to see that this book has to start to make some conclusions. He says, I agree that everything catches up with you. It all catches up with you. Right? If the choteh does evil, and he ma'arich lo, right? He continues on and on, like Yahu said, right? Ki gam yodeh ani asher yetov liray Elokim asher yum lefanav. I know that people who are afraid of him, their good will catch up with them too. Just keep your moral stance. The good will catch up with you. I mean, you? No, maybe not you, but morality. The moral one may die in his morality. Like the guy who chose not to take his son off the Quorum of 400. V'tov lo yiyel rashav, lo yarich yomim katzel. The ultimate good will not work its way to the Rasha. He will not have longevity. He'll be like the shade in the shadow. Asher einenu yorei milifnei Elokim, because he has no fear of God. And you hear this is a crucial point. Although we don't always see it, it's crucial that we get strengthened by the idea that such evil, listen carefully to how this is formulated, because that's what this Pasuk Yud Gimel is saying, must succumb to the burden and weight of its own actions. That means Mitzrayim cannot perpetuate that behavior. It means Nazi Germany can't perpetuate that behavior. You think you're going to last 1,000 years? What you can probably point to 100 things, but what was the main event that turned the tide of World War II? Because if Nazi Germany wins the war, I'd say forget it. They had plans for a crematoria in New Jersey already. You watch Star Trek. There's a Star Trek episode that the Nazis win World War II because Franklin Roosevelt was convinced to stay out of the war because a woman has to die in order to win World War II, and they let her die.
Yeah, so
supposed to be their favorite. It was their favorite episode. I forget the name of it, but something of tomorrow, something City of Tomorrow, something like that. Anyway, so So what turns the tide? Was it something a man did? Very possibly. If Winston Churchill wasn't able to convince the British Parliament, you know, because they, I don't know if he ever wanted to, or ever felt that, but there are plenty of Brits who felt that we should accommodate the, you know, and come to terms with the Germans. History shows that they would have broken that term like they broke the Russian term. Right? They wanted to save the soldiers who were trapped in Dunkirk. Right? So in the end, heroic behavior from ordinary Brits. Do you see what's going on here? I think they made a couple of movies about this. That it was ordinary people who turned things around. Right? Most of the soldiers were not saved by British warships. They were saved by simple, you know, small ships across the channel. Are you familiar with that point of history? It's ordinary people. But I think I've read many military strategists on this. It was really the fact that the winter of 1941 was the coldest winter of the 20th century. And the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, succumbed to that winter the same way Napoleon did. It was such a silly thing. Russia was in his hand. Russia was in his pocket. Russians weren't going to do anything. If he had gone into England at that time and take care of England, and then there's no beachhead for the Americans to come in. They weren't in the war for a while. Just take, you know, mop up England and then take Russia. Instead, he went into Russia at the same time. And then the war was basically over by then, but it didn't stop them from, obviously, their machines continuing, especially since Japan took a lot of our energies in a different theater. So, but what it was ordinary people and some kind of act of, you know, the weather is not something that people determine, but, okay. So Koheles is saying here, what he's saying here is that kind of thing has to catch up with you. Asher cannot continue to do this in perpetuity. Nimrod can't do it in perpetuity. Nimrod has a Kiv Shanaish where he's throwing everyone in who doesn't go along with his plan. Every oppressive society had to have a Kivshan Ha'esh. His plan was like North Korea today. Kol Aretz Safar Chavsud V'Machadim. Everyone should be the same. Right? That's very popular in socialistic circles. Right? Medrash says if a brick fell, they would kill the person who dropped it. Right? If a person fell, right, sweep them away. The state that's more important than the individual. Nothing could be further from the truth in the Torah. Right? So Koheles is saying that can't be perpetuated. Take a look at Perek Tes, Pasuk Hey. Ki achayim yodim shemusa v'meisim enam yodim me'uma. What's going on here? It says, like at the end of Perek Gimel, where it said better are the people who have already passed from this world than the people who are still stuck here. What does that mean? What are you suggesting there? What are you suggesting? Intentional suicide? It says, "Amesim einam yodim meuma, ve'ein od lahem sochar v'nishkach sikram." The point is obvious: is that you better do everything here in this world. God only takes donations after you're no longer here. Only takes receipts, not donations. This rich man dies and he goes up to meet his maker after not doing any charitable works with all his money. So he says to God, "God, now that I see your face, oh, it's so obvious to me. I should have done a lot more charitable works. Do me a favor." Go down there. You can do anything. With my full understanding and grace, I want you to go down and take all of that money. Convince my son that he should give $5 billion of my estate to these various charities. And God says, I'm sorry, it's too late. I don't take donations anymore. At this point, I only take receipts. You can't decide. And it's finished. This pasuk says, right? Okay. It says here, Ayein brachas daf yud ches. That's the Gemara where Rabbi Chiya's sons after Rabbi Chiya died, are bemoaning the fact that they can't figure out the sugya they're learning because they don't have their father to ask. And they're wondering, does daddy know how much trouble we're in? And they debate whether the dead have any concern or care about what's going on in the world. They agree that the dead are affected by what we do, possibly even by the eulogy they get. But they debate whether the dead, whether it concerns them or not, or whether they, you know, whether they're aware of it, let's put it that way. Okay. All right. He says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Shafti v'ro'o tachas ha-shemesh ki lo lakalim ha-merots. This race is not just for the light-footed. V'lo l'giborim ha-melchama, and the war is not for real giborim. V'gam lo l'chachamim lechem. See the word milchama and lechem. Because the reason why the word for bread and the word for war is the same kind of word, right, is because there's a great battle we must fight whenever eating. What's that battle? When to stop. Every other animal will continue eating what's there. Yes, they do. A squirrel will put a squirrel away food for later, but only after he's full. Right? The battle of when to say no. You remember we said once before, Umosar ha'adab min ha'behema. How are we better than an animal? You say that every day. What's the next word? Mosar ha'adam in abhema ayin ki akol havel. How is a man better than an animal? Because we know how to say ayin. We know how to say no, the animal doesn't. Okay, it's a drash. Okay. And then he says, Pasuk Beis, ki gam lo yeda ha'adam es ito kadogim shenechosim b'mitzodah ra'ah. I'm reading Perek Tes Pasuk Yud Beis. I have to tell you something. I have to get off on a big tangent now. Rav Soloveitchik felt that this was one of the most debilitating psukim in Sefer Koheles. He says he could work around all the others, but this one is extremely debilitating. Let me explain in terms of Eov. You know the basic storyline in the beginning, that the Satan tempts God and God goes along with it? But Eov maintains his moral equilibrium. So God tells the Satan, do you see Eov? He's perfect. And you made me give him all those punishments for nothing. For nothing? Things happen to us for nothing? To anybody? I don't even mind saying something's happening to me because of something my great-grandfather did 500 years ago. That's something. But just nothing? There's dice being thrown? Two people are playing a game of chess and that's my life? This is Roman theology. This is mythology. What do you mean nothing? Right, so I have to explain, nothing means no discernible reason that a human being can figure. Okay, I know someone who lost his hearing in one ear. He thought it's because he once heard a terrible lush and horror that he didn't stop. He didn't even identify what it was. He just said, I must have heard lush. Really? That's why? He had a little tumor in his benign tumor that cut off his ear in one ear. What a tzaddik. Right? In other words, I knew someone who never died at 21 of leukemia. And throughout his whole all the trials, he went to a makubal who said, I can take your sickness, but I have to give it to another person. And he stormed out of there. How dare you talk like this? He said, I'm going to give it to an Arab child or something. I have to give it to someone your age. A despicable thing. Right? But what he told me was that he passed away shortly after this. He said, I can deal with all this suffering. And he suffered so much with all these, at that time it was like 35 years ago, these experimental treatments. And right? So I can deal with all that, but as long as I know that there's a cheshbon to this, cheshbon, the words that, you had that word just before, that this is happening for a reason. It can't just be haphazard. He said, I'm worried that I'm being a kofir just thinking of that, but as long as there's a reason for this, as long as there's a cheshbon. Okay, I can deal with it then. Right? That's what Echina means, that what God says this is, because people try to discern, why did this happen to me? Why did I get that? Why, oh yeah, I was a little lax with that money. I'm gonna, you're right, it's not mine, I should give it back. Right? Look for those messages. Maybe you're wrong about the message. Huh? It's still getting me to do the right thing. Right? Okay. By the way, caution. Only do that with yourself. Don't do that with someone else. Not allowed to tell someone why they're suffering. That's a mission in Bava Metzia that says, we talked about Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Elazar, remember? Okay. So, the word pit'on here is what the Rav thought was so debilitating. Pit'on, just suddenly. I just read a devastating report that says that there are, you know, things that cause cancer, right? So they're carcinogens. You smoke too much, that'll change around some genes inside you, in your lungs, right? You eat charcoal food all the time. The charcoal, black charcoal, they say is a carcinogen. You know what carcinogens are, right? So I just read a report that some of the mutations that cause cancer are kind of randomly. So my answer is, yeah, they're random in the year 2018, but in the year 2086, they won't be random anymore. You know what I'm saying? In other words, 150 years ago, you died of an infection in your finger. For penicillin, you died from Chas v'Shalom, complications of tooth decay. What kind of world is that? Right? This is the evolution of making God's world a better place. Right? So that the Shekhinah can rest in a better place. So the pit'om aspect is very debilitating. Everything is fine. And that's why we pray in plural, not just because, so I don't need a refuah today, but someone else does. But no, you need a refuah also. You need maintenance. Everything is going well with you in your parnasa, but God, please keep it that way. Who knows what can happen tomorrow? Life is such a game of inches. You leave this room and the brick falls down from it, right? From the roof just on you. How did that happen? Right? So the Rav Soloveitchik used this to explain an amazing thing. It's no gear to it's almost the end of the yom, but I'm going to move. This, you know, when I teach Koheles, I don't know if we're going to have time for Eichel. We may have to go right into Esther. But Koheles and Esther have Rav Soloveitchik used this pasuk as a segue between the two Megillos. Because if you hear of a drasha in Chazal that Yom HaKippurim is a Yom Kippurim. Have you heard of it?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah. Okay. So in what way is a day of festivities and drinking like a day of denial? Right? So, all right, the Gemara and the Mishnah in the Sefer Tanya says the way you Yom Tovim the Yisrael Kiyom HaKippurim because we're forgiven of our sins. But still, it says the other day wasn't even Purim, the other day is Tu B'Av. Right? Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av are the festive days. Because the Gemara says that refers to a time before the Purim story happened. But okay. But I'm just saying that it's really, I couldn't think of 2 days more apart than Yom Kippur and Purim. So what, just because of these words? From Purim? Please. That's a drash. But Rav Soloveitchik explained it as follows. He says, the main service of Yom Kippur involves taking two goats and choosing lots over their heads for which one goes to the holiest thing, Kadosh Lashem, and which one gets sent over a cliff with all the sins of Israel between its horns. What is the thing that determines it? What does the Torah call it? Goros, right? Lots. Okay. So, and what are they chosen of goats? Interestingly, to be like a goat in Latin is to be capricious. You know what the word means in English? Unpredictable. Capricious is whimsical. Right? which describes the lot. The lot is quite whimsical. The goat is Capri. It behaves in a whimsical fashion. It goes this way, turns, and goes on. It doesn't go in a predictable motion. Right. Anyway, that's where the English word capricious comes from. Right? Capricorn is a goat. Right. So the Yom Kippur service is everybody in Israel watching as these two goats are chosen for exact opposite destinies. By the way, the Mishnah says they have to look exactly alike. They have to be exactly the same size. This is all chachila, but they have to cost the same, they have to be the same height, same weight. If one has a dot here, the other has the dot, almost like twins. So they, on the face of it, they look exactly alike, right? But they end up exactly the opposite based on something as capricious as the goral, because that's life. We come to God on Yom Kippur watching this event saying, God, I want to be that one that's Kadosh Lashem. But life is a game of inches. I don't come to you to make excuses today, but I'm coming to say I'm trying harder. I want you to cut me some slack because of this aspect of life. And so, because Pitom, who knows what can happen tomorrow? I'm here on Yom Kippur saying I want a new slate. I want to start all over. I'm going to try harder. I may be back here next year saying all the same things. I probably will be. But I want you to give me another year now. Right? Now, what does Purim mean in Persian?
It means lockers.
Yipil Pur, Hu HaGoral. It just begs the question, why are we naming the holiday lots? What's the significance of the way that Haman decided to kill the Jews? That the holiday should be called Chag Esther or something like that. Purim, what is even having to do with the story? Right? The answer is that the Purim story is just like our history. One day we're enjoying the festivities of the king, and the next day our lives are in danger. Right? Life is so capricious in it. It's like Bayokum Mel Chodosh, and then all of a sudden things are different. The Gemara is so beautifully and poignantly hit on this by saying, in the beginning of the story, the king's best friend convinces the king to kill his wife. At the end of the story, the king's wife convinces him to kill his best friend. Right? So, what happens in Purim is that it reflects, especially in postal arts, but the human experience is so capricious and so flimsy that we have to try our best and make our argument on Yom Kippur for another year based on this. That's a Yom Kippurim. And by the way, reading Yonah in the afternoon of Yom Kippur, I think, now also has important meaning, because there's quite a bit of a major element in the beginning of the story of determining who's responsible for this storm by. Remember the story?
Yeah. They drew lots.
Yeah. So the Goralot is in the Yonah story also. You see, right? So this aspect of, not that we're fatalistic, no, we're not. We believe that through a belief in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's derech, we have a way out of this, right? Doesn't look like we're finishing Kohelis today either. So now we'll be able to answer the question, how is Yom Kippurim? You got it? Right? And the debilitating aspect of that pasuk is the pitom. Because everything can happen suddenly. You're enjoying everything's going well and all things, and it becomes like a snowball. Okay? So it means you've got to keep in shape, if you know what I mean. All right? Okay? So it says at the end of Perek Tes, Toba Chochma Mikli Krov Vachote Echod Yabei Toba Habei. One small bit of a chait can cause a great deal to be lost. While it's true that one small candle can shed a lot of light on a very dark room, that's true too, right? Right? So Rashi gives a second interpretation that says, if everybody is 50-50, mechza mechza, remember the Rambam that says this, it's my Yavamas. You should always imagine the world is exactly 50-50. And you can shift the world to 50-51 for tzaddikim. In other words, as Rambam says that you have a town, a city, a state, a country, and the countries of the world. Okay? So in your town, it's 50-50. The cities are 50-50. The states are 50-50. The countries are 50-50. Right? Your country is 50-50. So your next act will turn your town, which will flip your city, which will flip your state, which will flip your country, which will flip the whole world. That's Rashi's interpretation. And, or Chas V'Shalom the other way. One little deed of... Okay. Okay, Rashi's first interpretation says that... Remember the story of Sheva ben Bichri? When they said, send him out, or we'll kill it, we're going to take this town. After Avshalom's revolt against David, someone named Sheva ben Bichri from Sheva ben Yamin rebelled also. And when they sent him out... They cut off his head and threw it over the wall, so you go off, you know, left. So if not for doing that, Sheva ben Bichri, the whole place would have. Have you heard Yishchayav Nisa Kesheva ben Bichri? Have you heard that too? That's perfect. Right. So Rashi says that's the thing. Alright, but you don't have to use it. You can use your imagination how one bad deed ruins it for everybody. Okay. Now, Perek Yud. Now, of course, it's starting to draw us to a close, right? Perek Yud is about natural tendencies. You see, if you see the Targum, Pasuk Aleph, it says, "V'yitzra bisha yishchein al tara liba." Okay, so you understand we have natural tendencies, certainly towards selfishness. It's a label dumb ra min urav, right? So he says that they're like zvuve mabes, yabish, yabia shem and rokeach, yakar mechachma, yakabot sichlus ma'at. It's in us, it's part of us, it gives us the spice of life. But what we need to do is to bend it. Maybe you hear the Gemara in Brachos that says, kol avocha, shbishnei yitzarecha, that it's possible to serve God even with your yitzarah. Not a Christian thought, that's for sure. Right? Know your strengths, know your weaknesses. There's a big sugya at the end of the Sefer Sukkim, Dafran Beis, all about these inyanim, about the nature of the Yetzer Hara. It's very clever. It starts off small, then it gets bigger, and it snowballs the more you give into it. Mara says that, you know, we all have a small aver. If you keep it hungry, it's satisfied. If you satisfy it, it'll stay hungry. Right? And remember in the parable of the rich man and the poor man with the sheep that Nasan told David? I'm talking about, right? So it's all in one pasuk. It's small bet perik beis pasuk David. One pasuk says, a halach came to the rich man. He refused to give any of his own sheep to feed the oreach who came to him. Instead, he took the one lone sheep of the poor man to feed the ish. Habai love. Yet in the same pasuk, this man who came to the rich man is called first a halech, then an oreach, and then an ish. So if the rich man is David, the poor man is Uriah, the sheep is Bathsheba, who's the guest? Who is the thing that wants to makes the rich man take the sheep of the poor man?
It's the Yetzirah.
Right? So the Yetzer Hara starts off as a halach. You get it? Then it turns to an oreach. And then it turns to an ish. Then you're in trouble. You got a halach, you can just say, oh, you just passed by. I'm sorry, I'm busy, I can't. You invited me, he's now a guest. All right, I guess you, but once an ish is paying rent in your head. You get it? You know, he's there. Right? You can't evict him so easily. Okay, that's going to be where we're going to take the Perek Yud. Okay, I keep threatening that we're going to finish Kohelis. I do think that we will on Thursday. Okay. And then when you see our segue, I'm going to take it further into Esther.